Yeah, thanks for a nice introduction. This is Anthony. We're talking about a recent work with this title. You can find it on archive with lots of collaborators in Amazon. So today, our main task of interest is thermal state preparation. This is also known as Gibbs sampling. We're interested in the following task, where someone gives you a quantum Hamiltonian and given a quantum computer, your goal is to prepare the thermal state. And the thermal state is the following object. It's called Gibbs state, where the Gibbs state is written as an incoherent mixture of energy eigenstates with the appropriate Boltzmann weight. Okay. And this beta is known as the inverse temperature, where if you make beta really large, it corresponds to the ground state. Okay. If you make beta zero, this corresponds to the maximally mixed state. And of course, any question you have, please ask me any moment. All right, so this is a goal that we're interested in today. And this Gibbs sampling task, you can think of it as purely from a theoretical point. However, I want to also emphasize that the practical aspects of this algorithmic task is that lots of people are building quantum computers, right? And there, it is expected that quantum simulation will be one strong candidate for at least lots of practical speedups. And also, what's quantum simulation? Quantum simulation is the task to estimate properties of your material. Okay, so for example, you can ask what's the ground energy of carbon dioxide. And you can imagine, in order to execute this this experiment on your quantum simulator, there are several things that you might need to do. You might need to prepare a state, you might need to evolve it according to the dynamics, and do some measurements, which is fairly perceivable. You have these tasks. And what appears extremely mysterious is the first part, the state preparation. Right, for example, you might be most interested in the ground state or the thermal state of matter, which is kind of the standard assumption you always start with in physics. And you can ask, how hard is it to prepare such a state? Okay. And quite embarrassingly, if you look at recent proposals of like how people would actually do the whole quantum simulation, there are several these papers made by these companies to try to calculate the cost of this task. And there is just a big unknown factor about how expensive this first part is. Like, what's the cost of preparing a such state, right? If the cost is cheap, then we're happy. But it could be extremely expensive. That would mean that this might just be a really bad application if this turns out being extremely expensive. So what's going on here? So it turns out the reason why this is mysterious is actually has a very good reason. And the answer you get depends a lot on who you ask, right? So if you ask complexity theorists, they would tell you that, well, this task looks really, really difficult. But in the worst case, it becomes QMA hard. So for those of you who are not complexity theorists, QMA hard is like an analog of quantum NP hard. So it's something that we don't expect quantum computer to solve efficiently. But it seems kind of contradictory if this is going to be your application of quantum computer. However, intuitively, based on physical grounds, you might expect that thermodynamics is much better or like more optimistic. Right, the laws of thermodynamics tells you if you have a refrigerator, you put your things inside a refrigerator, it gets cold. And in particular, it could just be the ground state of your system. All right, so you see that two different things are happening, and it amounts to, as a theorist, you just have to draw the appropriate boundary. So the worst case is it could happen in very extreme cases, but you want to know that the system of that you're interested in, whether it's more like average case or worst case, is it nicer or is it actually kind of bad? Further, if you ask computational physics people, they would say that, well, this problem might even be classically easy. Indeed, there are lots of classical heuristic that has been widely applied in the field of this classical simulation, and that works pretty well. All right. So in other words, if you want to say that here's a task that is quantumly easy but classically hard, you have to also be very careful. Right. So as of today, this mystery of low energy states has still been one of the most open problems in quantum computation. And you see, it's a very congested ground. Right? In order to make progress, we have to make the right set of assumptions to draw these boundaries, and also to think about the right kind of algorithms that allows you to prove things. All right, so far so good. Right, and what we're going to do today is to present a new angle on this topic. Right now, I call it Monte Carlo style quantum algorithms. We haven't come up with a very good name yet because it's kind of new. And what is it doing? Is a quantum analog of classical Monte Carlo methods. Right, so some of you who may have implemented these classical Monte Carlo methods, it is a way to simulate physics, classical physics, especially for Ising models. Right, if you have like a 2D Ising models, you can play around with these algorithms that allow you to see all kind of phase transition of kind of domain walls. Right, and this has been invented for a very long time and still being employed today. But in modern times, Monte Carlo usually is now applied in a lot of other places. That's kind of unexpected. It has been working remarkably well in just all kind of problems listed on the left hand side. Right, so it's a very, very general method, but also at the same time, very easy to use. Right, so it's both universal, but also kind of, you can just throw it at any problem you want. And it's hard to imagine our lives without classical Monte Carlo methods. And you can think of the work today as the quantum version of that, where we can also expect well-spread applications, just like the case of classical Monte Carlo. It's going to inherit lots of the similar features of Monte Carlo. For those of you who are more from a physics background, you can understand algorithms as thermodynamics, like a rigorous way of understanding thermodynamics when you're in the context of a thermal bath. This entails lots of physics topics, like chaos, spin law, thermodynamics. All of them are pretty big subjects of studies. And what our results will tell you is that this rigorous understanding is also going to reversely tell you something rigorous about open system, about our understanding of thermodynamics.
Hi. I have a question about the previous slide, actually. So I think like we know that the ground state problem is QMA complete in general. So Do you have any guarantee about the like Gibbs state at FNNT?
So if you make beta really large, that would just recover the ground state.
Yeah, but like and maybe is it possible like at any finite temperature.
Yeah, for finite temperature, I don't know. I don't recall complexity results. So it will be an interesting thing to say that if Gibbs state could still be as hard as the ground state.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Right, so let's get ourselves prepared for our main results. And to do that, we first introduce classical Monte Carlo. Right? Because the thing I'll be talking about is really a quantum version of this. So it's good to start with this and make sure you can understand what's going on here. Okay. So to be very quick, the idea of Markov chain Monte Carlo, often called MCMC, is to implement a Markov chain that converges to the Gibbs state, right? And your goal is to sample from this Gibbs state. You want to understand the Gibbs state. And in this cartoon model, it has only four different states. It has energy from 0 to 3. And your goal is to sample from a Gibbs state, which is going to look like this exponentially falling distribution. Right, because the Boltzmann weight penalized the higher energy states. Right? And you can imagine in order for this Markov chain to work, you want it to be biased toward the low energy states because more stuff, because the zero energy has the highest weight. And you can verify that this particular choice of transition rates give you the Gibbs state. Now, this is like a direct calculation. That's maybe not entirely obvious why this is the choice, but you see that the factor exponential minus beta comes in to the these parameters. Right. So then you can ask, like, how am I going to enforce this Gibbs state in general? Right. This very simple contrived example, I can do it by hand, but how do I do that in general? So one thing that people usually do is to introduce the idea of detailed balance. Right, so this is all review. You have seen this, but let me just very quickly tell you what it is. So detailed balance is a condition that you can impose to make your Markov chain as the Gibbs state as the stationary distribution. It's actually very intuitive. So what you want to impose is that if you look at any pair of states, then you can see that there's going to be arrows moving from one direction and the other direction. And detailed balance is the condition that these two flows cancel out each other at stationarity. Ready? Do some equations. The thing here is the Boltzmann weight. And then this R is the rate of flowing. Right? And you just want this to flow from two sides to equate each other. And thus, the whole thing must be stationary. Okay. To reiterate, we can look at the Markov chain in the form of matrix, or this transition matrix. So if you just sort them according to their energies, it's going to look like a almost diagonal matrix. Right, because each of these jump only change the energy by one. So it's going to be a nearest neighbor hopping transition rates. Right. And in this form, you can see that detailed balance is some kind of symmetry of this matrix. It's some kind of reflection symmetry that these entries across the diagonal is to obey this equation. And here, the Boltzmann factor explicitly comes in. So if beta is zero, this matrix, this transition matrix is symmetric, and the stationary state is going to be the uniform distribution. When beta is large, there's going to be bias on this matrix, and that's indeed what's needed to ensure the Gibbs state is the stationary distribution. So any questions so far?
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to make this picture very clear because it's going to show up in a quantum case as well. So better make sure we can understand what's going on here. So there's this transition matrix corresponding to the Markov chain. And detailed balance is just some symmetry of this transition matrix. All right, the next question is, Now I've told you this idea of detailed balance, but how are you going to implement it? Right? Because in the end, you want an algorithm. It's not just some abstract equation. You want something that you can actually run. Right? So you think that, well, so someone give you a really, really big Markov chain. You have lots of states, perhaps exponentially many different states that you don't know in advance. Now you can think of it, the transition matrix, as extremely large. And then you say that, well, I want detailed balance where the symmetry obey this exact symmetry, right? That these entries across the diagonal are related by the Boltzmann factor. And then there's this energy scale omega. It's like, how different are these energies? Like, is the energy change in these transitions? It's kind of how far away you are from the diagonal, right? This is just what mathematically it means. And if you just look at this condition, you might think that, well, this is like a horribly exact condition. Like, how are you going to fine tune your Markov chain that you don't really know in advance, such that this holds? Right, it's not obvious. There was a really remarkable idea of Markov chain Monte Carlo method that you can do rejection sampling. Right, this is a method that blindly imposes detailed balance without knowing the whole thing. Right, so what's doing is that you're just going to look at pairs of transitions, and then you're going to cancel out one side of the transition by rejecting the move. So you only reject one of the transitions so that it becomes weaker effectively. Okay, and then you can kind of cancel this out, and then you see that one direction is going to be weaker. And since you know the energy, you know precisely how much you want to cancel out to get this factor. Okay. So this idea actually comes from a very old algorithm, but still being employed today. And let me just go through what it's roughly doing to get this very concretely. Right. So this Metropolis-Hastings algorithm, as a user, you're going to input the following parameters. You're going to choose a Hamiltonian. For example, it could be an Ising model. And there, the parameters are just these JIJs. Then you also need to choose a target temperature that parameterizes your Gibbs state. And then as a user, also need to specify a set of jumps. Hey, what are these jumps? You can think of them as spin flips, right? So you have some IC model, you're just going to say, okay, let me just now just randomly flip the spins. It's going to change the state, and that's what you want, because you want to kind of some dynamic to happen. For your Markov chain, right? So once you input all of these parameters, the algorithm is ready to run. And here's a picture of what it's doing. So you would put in the algorithm some initial state, speed up and down, it can be pretty arbitrary. And then each time you're going to randomly flip a spin, these jumps, and then you're going to see that whether the energy increase or decrease. If energy decreases, that's great. You just keep going. If energy increases, that's bad. It means that your system is heating up. And then you're going to most likely reject this move. Now you're going to only accept with a tiny probability. Right. And when you reject, you're just going to undo the move and then repeat. So right now, this algorithm looks completely innocent, and this is something that you can really code up and to enforce fairly straightforwardly, because each time you're just only looking at things locally, right? You change energy, and then you do some rules to accept or reject. Remarkably, this detailed balance idea is actually manifested in this very simple algorithm, such that the Gibbs state is indeed provably a stationary distribution. So it means that if you just run an algorithm for some time, after it mixes well, after it stabilizes, the output is going to be a sample from a Gibbs distribution. Any questions? All right. If you understand classical Monte Carlo now, our task today is to quantize it. Right. So we can now list all of the things we want to quantize. We want to quantize classical spin configuration into quantum states. We want to quantize the Gibbs distribution, which is a distribution over strings, now become the Gibbs state, the quantum Gibbs state. Right. Now you have to worry about this quantum. This energy eigenstate of your Hamiltonian, right? And your Hamiltonian is now going to be quantum. You can have Pauli XYZs. It's non-commuting. It's not obvious how you diagonalize this Hamiltonian. And your jumps are not going to be quantum spin flips, so just Pauli XYZs. And the goal of today is to design an algorithm that achieved above. How are you going to do that? Right. So that's we can now talk about the main part of today's result is how you're going to design such an algorithm. Right. So the first thing you might want to try is that intuitively all that you're doing is to change. It's kind of like a change of basis, right? Because originally you have this classical basis, just the computational states, and now you just want to go through the energy eigenstates. And indeed, the Gibbs state is just a classical object once you're in the energy basis. And then you say, well, what is the quantum analog of transition probabilities? All right, and we have seen this transition matrix sorted by the energy. And then you can heuristically write down the quantum object, which is the transition amplitudes. Right? You just ask, like, after I apply a move A, which after I flip a spin, which energy does it lead me to? Right? You can just write down this transition matrix or transition amplitudes in an energy basis. And once you take a square, that's kind of the transition probability. Right? So this seems to be one idea to try. However, there are lots of challenges associated with this idea, is that quantum algorithm, it's not so easy to reject a quantum move. Because classically, you can just clone the previous state and then go back. But quantumly, it's not clear how you do that. There is an algorithm, but the algorithm is kind of complicated. You somehow have to be really, really careful of designing an algorithm such that you kind of can return to the previous state. And there are some technical terminologies associated with this rejection. But it's doable, but it's kind of complicated. And it further make our life very messy because the fact that energy measurement is also uncertain. Right, this is the energy time uncertainty principle. So the picture you have is this on the bottom right, is that you're going to be some kind of blob of energy that you roughly know, but you're not going to know the exact ones. Right? And then your Markov chain is going to keep this ambiguity when it's jumping around. And but this leads to also lots of other problems that you lose detail balance because of this uncertainty. And then you're not really dealing with the classical object anymore because the energies could be entangled. Like there's no obvious way how it is entangled on the nearby energies because you don't, this is like quantum algorithm is not able to do that. Any questions?
I have a question about, again, your previous slide. Yeah, for this matrix, I guess if you assume the ETH, then those like the blue line and the red line will be extremely small in. Okay.
Yeah, so ETH gives you some prescription of this transition amplitude. That's correct.
Thanks.
And also, it will be extremely small, but once you add them up, it actually becomes fairly large. So this is a normalization because there's so many states. So each of them cannot have big transition rates.
So if you can sorry, solve, you mean each element can be large?
No. So each entry is going to be small.
Right.
But if you kind of sum over all the possible outgoing probabilities, actually going to be constant. Like
I see. Fairly large. Yeah. Okay. Right. Thanks.
Yeah. Right. So we have seen all these quantum challenges, and you can ask, so how come this is so difficult? If you're a physicist, you would say that, well, I would just put my system in my refrigerator and it's going to work. Right? As the law of thermodynamics tells you, if you just couple your system to a bath, you're going to get a Gibbs state. And if you make a temperature cold, you're going to get a Gauss state. Right? So how come nature is doing this so easily, but we're kind of getting so stuck? Yeah, so as part of our algorithmic design, we're going to draw inspiration from nature. And here is one first observation, is that nature is continuous. Right? Nature is not really doing this discrete jumps, this discrete rejection step. Instead, it just does everything continuously. Right. So what's going to happen in nature is that instead of doing this rejection, it's going to lower the rate of unwanted transitions. Right. Instead of kind of going forward and go back, it just kind of do it slow, like do just kind of lower the strength of the transition, infinitesimally. Right. All that's doing in nature is that you just put some weight on these transition amplitudes, and then that's it. Right. So somehow, the nature also prescribes you this detailed balance condition by putting the correct weight gamma. Schematically corresponds to the same picture we've been looking at. And then this also ensures Gibbs fixed point. And so somehow nature has its own way of solving this problem. And we're going to draw inspiration from this. And of course, this is not the full solution because right now we are assuming perfect energy measurements because we're kind of accessing the exact energy of omega. And it's generally not possible because the level spacing are really tiny. You can't really talk about individual energy transitions. Right? So this band has to be fattened because you don't really know the exact energy. So let me just use this chance to also introduce a bit of this formalism that I've been talking about. So when I talk about things that are doing are done continuously, what I'm really talking about is Lindblad. So that maybe some of you have heard if you're more from a physics background. It looks like this complicated object. And you can take this case, for example, as like photon laws or like spin flips. So there are some explicit choices you can plug in here that would model open system. Right, so this really is a whole family of things you can write down. And formally, this is just a continuous time Markov chain, but in a quantum case, or people call it master equation, Luvilliens, that it generates dynamics for this row of t. However, since this is non-unitary, it could have fixed points, so it could it could be the case that every row that you start with converges to the Gibbs distribution. And if you're more from quantum information, this k, you can think of them as analog of on channels, but now everything is continuous. But they're very much the same thing. Okay. No questions? All right, with this in mind, I can present the main result of today, is that we design such an algorithm as the quantum analog of the classical one. And this algorithm takes the form of a Lindblad-ian, whose fixed point is the one you want, is the Gibbs state. Okay. And it mimics or inherits a lot of the nice feature of Monte Carlo, that it applies to any Hamiltonian. There's a universal algorithm. Of course, the mixing time is going to depend on your problem. It's also similar to the classical case. Also, it doesn't require any fine tuning, so it's not a variational method. You don't have to optimize for a gazillion number of parameters. This is something that you can just write down and run. And all you need to choose is are some set of jumps operators. All right. I'm sorry, but I have to write down a theorem in any of these talks. But let's at least take a look at what's going on here. So as a user, you're going to fix some n-qubit Hamiltonian H. This could be some Ising model. You pick a temperature beta, and then some set of jumps. And then we claim the following, that there is a Lindblad-ian that we can write down such that it has the approximate Gibbs fixed point. Right, so the fixed point of our map is very close to the one you want, which is the Gibbs state, up to some error. And second, this Lindblad-ian L can be efficiently emulated on your quantum computer with very few ancillas. And Hamiltonian simulation time scaling like this, right? So the content here is that here's your algorithm you can run, and the cost is really just the mixing time. So it's really an analog of classical Monte Carlo. Classical Monte Carlo also gives you some algorithm that you know the fixed point is correct, but you just don't know how long you're going to wait until it converges. And what we're giving is the analog of that. And our results are actually far more general than this. We established a whole framework to study other Lindblad-ians, including the ones that's arising from nature, which means that we also proved thermodynamics and in a sense of giving these kind of bounds, that we proved that a lot of the open system dynamics also has the correct fixed point being the Gibbs state. From an algorithmic point, you can just say, well, why do I care about things happening in nature? I can kind of speed up things even more. And indeed, you can get a quantum walk speed up and then obtain a purified Gibbs state. Right? And to some of you, the purified Gibbs state is also called the thermal field double state, where I think black hole people are kind of very excited about. So any questions on this slide?
I have a question. Anthony, can you elaborate on what the thermal pure double state is?
You purify the Gibbs state by attaching a copy of the state. Such that if you trace out the other ones, you return the Gibbs state. So it's kind of like the analog of maximally entangled state. Right? If you trace out a maximally entangled state, you get a mixed state on the other half.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
And this one is just somehow you put some Boltzmann weight on the maximally entangled state, and you get the purified Gibbs state.
I see. Thanks.
right? So let's get a sense of what I've been talking about. So pictorially, what we're doing here is just a random walk. As similar to classical Monte Carlo, you have some configuration and you're just performing a random walk on those configurations. And what's kind of different here is that it's semi-classical because there are some energy uncertainties here. Right, because your quantum algorithm don't really know the energies of your systems. So there's going to be some uncertainty such that the nearby states could remain entangled. Right, that's why I draw this blue shaded region. So you can think of this as a semi-classical random walk that has two kinds of mixing. That far apart energies, since you can't know what they are, if there's some incoherent mixing, you can really think of this as just probability being transferred around different energies. However, because all of this is quantum, there's also this coherent mixing that you can just rotate within the nearby subspaces. And because there's some limited energy resolution, we can't really tell what's happening inside these spaces. Things could remain coherent at nearby energies, and this could just keep being there throughout the whole algorithm. Right. And then, well, we don't really know how these things converge unless you do experiments. But fortunately, we do have a notion of quantum detail balance that tells you that roughly these transitions obey the correct Boltzmann weight such that a fixed point is the Gibbs state. So it really is the quantum is a classical version, but now you do everything on an energy basis. And you now can have this fuzzy energy measurements because it's quantum. Any questions? Hey, so one thing you might ask is that this picture seems completely innocent. It's not very classical, right? It's just like a random walk. And you can ask, why is this idea powerful? Like, why is this different from all the ones that people have been thinking about? So let's just give some comparing examples. So I know some people are interested in variational quantum circuits. And let's consider this very just this example and see how these two methods compare. Right, suppose you apply a jump or apply a gate to a state zero at zero energy, and then it becomes a superposition of one and minus one. And you can say, well, how does different algorithms approach this? Right. So pictorially, the average energy actually doesn't change because one is plus, one is half, and if you take expectation, they're actually zero. All right, so if you're running a variational circuit, you would say that, well, this move A doesn't change my average energy. So there's no gradient. However, if you use a Limbladian that we're employing, what's going to happen is that it's able to see, or it's able to select the correct moves. Right? It's going to see that, oh, there are some parts that increase energy that I don't like. They're part that I like that decrease the energy. And our quantum algorithm is able to select the better one. And therefore, it will be able to see a gradient and it will just keep going down. Right? And this really is coming from power of quantum algorithms that it can do quantum phase estimation, or also known as rewinding or energy filtering. So this part is really quantum. Any questions? Okay, if not, let's give another comparison with imaginary time evolution. Let's consider a very simple example, where the Hamiltonian is just a sum of independent Pauli Zs. Right, you can see that this Hamiltonian has the ground state being all zero. Right, just individually satisfy the constraints. And then just consider, we start with the initial state being all the plus states. And we ask, how does this algorithm perform? Right? So on the left-hand side, you have the imaginary time evolution that tries to apply this exponential negative beta h to the plus and hope that you would get the ground state in the end. However, this is quite expensive because the plus state is very, very, has almost no content of the ground state as in the superposition, right? If you calculate the overlap, the overlap is actually exponentially small, right? And then the cost of running imaginary time evolution is going to be exponential. However, if you run a Lindblatian, that is what our algorithm is doing, that we're trying to apply some dissipative process to the plus state so that it converges to the ground state. And in this example, the cost of the algorithm is the mixing time. And in fact, this mixing time is something that can calculate at roughly scale with n. Right, this is roughly the time that is required to flip every spin. And once you kind of flip every spin, they're all at a ground state and you win. Right, so you see that somehow these two scalings are just completely different. Imaginary time evolution, it cares about this overlap. But on the right-hand side, it doesn't care about that. It's really dynamic, but somehow it really makes things much, much nicer. Any questions on this?
So how should I understand this tmix equals n in this case?
Yeah, it's roughly that it's because roughly these Hamiltonians are independent. So you can just even look at one single spin and ask like how fast does that converge?
Oh, so your algorithm is not parallel?
Right, yeah, our algorithm as written is not parallel, so you just kind of have to wait inside it.
Okay.
And then it will be scaling with n. Yeah. So you can, if you parallelize it, it's going to be constant. Yeah, because it just flip everything at the same time. And you get a ground state.
Yeah, but I guess the nature is parallel, right?
Yeah, so nature is probably just constant. So it's like really, really fast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And how much time do I get?
You have 15 minutes to go.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so let's keep going on. So we also very close to the end. Let me just very quickly highlight some technical ideas behind construction. So here's a secret sauce that somehow that people are not able to find, but we kind of found it so that everything kind of every calculation go through. So somehow the key idea here is that you want to implement a Fourier transform on the operator. Usually people like to do Fourier transform on the state, but here we want to do it on operators, and somehow that's much nicer. So for physicists, this A of t is very natural. It's just the Heisenberg evolution, and this is just give you a time label, and you're just going to do Fourier transform on that time. Roughly, when you do the Fourier transform, it's going to diagnose the energy difference. So this is some calculation that you can sit down and work out that would correspond to the energy difference, right? And you can think of this as a digital version of the continuous Fourier integral if it is conceptually cleaner. So this is just a discrete version of that. So how should I think of this, this operator for your transform? It is basically a way to access the transition amplitudes. So previously, I've been telling you this transition amplitude on your left is this A in energy basis. But there I say that it's very difficult to access this because the energies are exact. But once you write down this Fourier transform, what you end up with is an approximate version of that. Right? You don't access the exact energies, but it's kind of being fatted a little bit. The energy is uncertain up to some controllable error. And technically, you have to choose this F to be Gaussian so that the Fourier transform is well behaved. But that's just technical. Roughly, you just get some kind of region that you can select. Okay. Right, and since I say it's a simple circuit, let me just show you. This is how you actually implement it. So this is kind of as simple as it gets. So you just apply time evolution on the left and right before you transform, and then you weight it with the appropriate Gaussian weights. And then based on this, you can fit into other algorithms that would give you the quantum algorithm that we want. Okay. Right. So that's the algorithm, and now I'll talk about some nice other properties of these objects. So what's very nice about Fourier transform is that they satisfy certain exact symmetries. You can think of this as the analog of being reversible in a classical case. So this dagger is kind of like, I don't know, flipping the kind of taking adjoints. So it's like reversing the transition matrix. And this is quite important to obtain quantum detail balance. So this is kind of a technical note I want to highlight. And then with this, you can put this into the quantum version of approximate detail balance. So there's some complicated mathematical object you can write down. That is the classical analog of detail balance. So things become a little complicated, but it really comes from the classical idea. But what's new here is that everything is approximate. So then you actually have to bound kind of how non-detail balanced this guy is. And then we kind of find the right norm to do that. And that in turn tells you how good of a Gibbs state you can obtain when you run the algorithm. Right, so if delta is zero, you're sure that the fixed point is going to be the Gibbs. But because of energy uncertainties, you're not going to be exactly detailed balanced, and that's going to kind of perturb your Gibbs state. Okay. That's roughly the content I want to tell you. I can now very quickly summarize. So today we have been talking about a particular family of algorithms that's coming from classical Monte Carlo methods. And remember, our goal is to find the thermal state or ground state of a Hamiltonian. And we give an algorithm for that task. This algorithm inherits a lot of the nice feature of classical methods. It's universal, doesn't require much of fine tuning, but it's also very, very general, that our theory also applies to other situations. Let me end by giving some quick follow-up ideas. This one is one we have been working on, we're aiming for the following claim, that you can actually make everything exact somehow you have to fine tune everything very carefully, then you can actually make things exact. And then the algorithmic cost actually improves a little bit more. But perhaps a more broader follow-up is that now that we define a map, it's kind of like the first time people actually define metropolis sampling. Now there are all kind of theory work you can try to prove. Now you can say, well, how fast is this mixing in these models? And there are lots of different models that people have been studying very well. In the classical case, you can just ask, what about a quantum case? So there's just like a whole land of unexplored results that can be proved given our results. And take one more step back. Our results have lots of connection for theory, numerics, and experiments. Theoretically, this is a new algorithm. You can try to apply this algorithm to some of the settings you know. And just to be fun, it will be fun to play around with. Numerically, there's going to be lots of new data to take, because we've defined a map and can actually run some small-scale numerics to see what's going on. Like this mixing time is just very mysterious, and I expect some new way of data is going to come in the next few months. And experimentally, of course, in the end, we hope that our algorithm could be run, but there's still a long way to implementation, and lots of adaptation is going to be needed to make it friendly. Okay, and with that, I would like to end here and take any questions you have.
Okay, thanks, Anthony, for the great talk. Any questions? I have a question. So, from your you mentioned you have a proposed new. Time scale for converge.
Yeah.
There's no even epsilon in it.
You mean this one?
Yeah.
Oh, it's log epsilon.
Log epsilon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a convergence, it's the exponential fast. Each time it's kind of like half. So you only need logarithmic many times to reach desired accuracy.
I see.
Yeah.
And also, how do I choose the jumps?
Right. Suppose you're doing the classical Monte Carlo method. How do you choose the jump? You try, and if it works, then it works.
Yeah. And
yeah, but usually it's not as sensitive because there are not that many different choices you can pick, and you just try them all, and then some of them will work.
Uh-huh.
In the quantum case, is less known because people have never done numerics. But I think once people do numerics, we'll kind of get a better sense of what's going on.
Okay, and this T mix only depends on the jumps, right?
Yes, and most importantly, depends on the Hamiltonian.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it could have some very difficult Hamiltonian that say encodes on NP-hard problems, and it's probably not going to be solved. It's going to take a very long time to mix.
Mm-hmm.
But for physically motivated Hamiltonians, it might just mix very quickly, right? Because that's what happens in nature. Right? Because you just experiment, that's what experiments tell us. So there are reasons for optimism.
Okay, so if I understand your result correctly, it's like for Hamiltonian and a jump, so basically the T mix already depends on the Hamiltonian and the jump.
Yeah.
And then your algorithm also has another overhead, which is beta. Is that right?
Yeah, there are several beta. Yeah, there are lots of these. Yeah. Error, the error okay. Sets up. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah. So beta, epsilon, mixing time. Depending on Hamiltonian set of jumps. So there are lots of parameters flying around. That's why it's so universal. But the concept is very simple. It's kind of like a Markov chain, and I just care about the mixing time.
Okay, any other questions?
Sorry, I got I got a naive question. So why do people want to prepare thermal deep state? Because it's kind of trivial in the sense that there's no like a long range order or correlation is kind of short range correlated. So.
Oh, yeah. Right. So you're saying that ground state is maybe more interesting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I think that's generally true. But I think also people haven't quite explored Gibbs state because usually Gibbs state is kind of hard to simulate on classical devices. So it could be just because it might be that Gibbs states are interesting, but just people haven't seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And second, realistic materials usually have a finite temperature. You want to know what's happening. If there's like a thermal phase transition, you need a Gibbs state to explore that. But I agree that, and maybe in many of the quantum cases, ground state is more interesting. Then yes, you make beta large and then go to the ground state. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, I actually have another maybe naive question. So in your algorithm, how does the pure state become mixed state?
Right, because all of these are dissipative. So you kind of randomly apply things. So entropy can increase.
I mean, for each trajectory, it's a pure state, right?
Yes, you can.
Oh, so you need to apply your algorithm like a lot of times?
Yes. I mean, right. So in the classical case, when you run Gibbs sampling, it gives you one sample.
Mm-hmm.
And each time the sample is going to be different. But it's going to be drawn from the Gibbs distribution.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you get a lot of trajectories, and then if you apply a sample average, you can get the, say, expectations over a Gibbs. Does that make, yeah?
Yeah, I see. Thanks. Okay, if there are no other questions.
I have a question.
Okay, please.
Oh, yeah. So thanks for the very interesting talk. Firstly, I wanted to ask, so here the claim is that you defined a lane guardian. So I'm guessing it's a constructive proof. Can I see what the how you construct that lane guardian?
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. And the one I can show you is this guy. So based on this, you can cook up a lane guardian.
Okay.
What does it look like? So these are roughly the jump. So the cross operators are basically this guy. And then you just apply the according weight.
Oh, okay.
So it's like gamma of omega A omega. Intuitively, what it's doing is that you have some transition omega.
Mm-hmm.
And you just put the weight. So if the omega is large, if the energy increases, you put a very small weight.
Okay.
If energy increases, put a big weight.
I see.
You can look at the explicit.
Yeah, and you've been showing this for the Heisenberg model, right? That's the Hamiltonian, or it's just...
Oh, no, this is general. This works for any Hamiltonian.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Yeah. And could you just walk us through the circuit again? I didn't end up... So I just remember there were some controlled operations. I just want to see it again, because... So here... Okay, so is this the extent of the algorithm, or...
This is the key ingredient of the algorithm that you have to do some other layers of things to get the final thing you want.
So you're sort of applying like the, I'm just asking a lot of questions, but you made a comparison of this method with the imaginary time evolution method and showed how it's better because it's more efficient and so on. Are there any other methods in existence that you would be comparing your method with, like for quantum thermal state preparation?
I actually don't know. So it will be quite interesting to compare with other ones. Like, I mean, these ones are the ones that is kind of conceptually very clean.
Yeah.
Other methods, sometimes you can use a variational circuit, and then you can add a lot of things. It's become less obvious how you argue, how they work. But these are the cleanest one we can find to compare with.
Yeah.
And I think the ones that makes it really nice is that it preserves probability, so you don't have to do post-selection. I think that makes all of those.
So why exactly does the imaginary time method lose probability again?
Yeah, because it's kind of like right, because they're only one state that you care about.
Okay, I see.
Right. So if you look at this guy, this has lots of other states. And all of the other states will just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to eventually just basically have to throw them away. Okay. And then because this state has such little component of the ground state, you kind of have to pay the big cost, because it's kind of like if you randomly measure the mixed state, there's a very little probability of getting the right state because there's so many of them. And you just have to wait until it came up. It will take exponential time.
So the difference just lies in the fact that this uses the state vector formulas and then the other one deals with the whole density matrix. I mean, in terms of the losing probability aspect.
In some sense, the essence of this is because it's dynamic.
Okay.
You can change all the state to the one state you want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right? Okay.
Yeah. If you start with this state, you would just change the state. You can just individually flip it down, right? And then once you flip all the spin, you give the ground state. So it's about doing something very simple, but what imagery and time evolution is missing.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.
Thanks.